Welcome to the Eco-Nurse Report. I'm your host, David Narum, here with
Kirk Cahoon,
and we're of Greenway Partners. Today, we're going to be talking with Beth Eschenbach. She's a professor in the Environmental Resources Engineering Department here at Humboldt State University. Beth is also involved with Design Your Future, an initiative working with local youth to get them more interested and involved in science, technology, engineering, and math. Beth, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a professor in Environmental Resources Engineering at Humboldt State University, and one of the things I've gotten involved with is something called the CSU Engineering Academies, and it was some financing from the California State University System to start some initiatives in our regional area to get teachers who are interested in helping students learn more about what engineering is.
And why were you drawn to engineering?
My path to engineering is a circuitous one. I was planning on being a transportation engineer and an environmental engineer, and I actually left engineering and went into math and psychology and came back to engineering in graduate school. So one of my passions for engineering education comes from the fact that I think I left engineering as an undergrad for some of the wrong reasons. But what I like about being an environmental engineer is I get to use math and science and computers to help solve environmental problems.
Well, and how does engineering do that? Like, can you give us a few just kind of big picture examples? I know there may be areas with transportation, as you mentioned, or maybe wastewater treatment. What are some examples of how engineering is helping to solve some environmental problems?
Well, at our campus, we have the Schatz Energy Research Center, and they're looking at renewable energy systems. And they've been very active in our community in looking at how Humboldt County might be able to move toward renewables. We also have the Arcata Marsh and Wildlife Sanctuary, which is one of the first constructed wetlands in the country to be used for treating wastewater, while at the same time has multiple ancillary benefits, such as providing habitat and actually even changing the value of the land around it to increasing the economic value of that land.
Right. And so engineering in the context of environmental problems is often brought in to figure out solving specific problems. But in the case of the marsh, I think, as you just mentioned, that's provided a range of benefits that maybe weren't anticipated by people originally. If you had said, go build us a treatment plant for wastewater, a standard approach would have gotten you something that you wouldn't have wanted to showcase, and birds may not have visited as regularly, and it wouldn't have been a centerpiece of the community.
Right. And that's one of the things we pride ourselves in our program, is that's why we call ourselves environmental resources engineering as opposed to environmental engineering. So we like to think about innovative solutions that aren't just focused at what's at the end of the pipe, but at really how do we manage our environmental resources for the benefit of the earth and people.
So Beth, just for clarification's sake, what would be the simplest definition of an engineer, maybe one that you use when you're talking with school children, just so we can kind of start from ground zero?
So what I say is engineers are problem solvers, and engineers are creative people who like to work with other creative people to solve problems. And so when I introduce myself as an environmental engineer, I'll say, what kind of problems do I solve? And usually the children can answer that one pretty quickly.
Do you come upon, when you're working with children or youth, maybe up through high school or even college kids, I guess, sort of an idea that they might have a misconception maybe about what an engineer is?
Well, yeah, in fact, the National Academy of Engineers has spent quite a bit of money trying to investigate what the public's perception of what engineering is, and is actually really trying to work with teachers and the public to have a better idea that actually engineers are much more than people who are just good at math and science.
Right. I think if you come at it from, you know, creative problem solving, I mean, that's something that sounds appealing to just about anybody, then you have the tools of the engineer to add on to that.
You know, I think for me, Beth, one of the things that really opened my eyes to what engineers do is they're really all around us all the time. And until I was in college, I didn't actually understand how an engineer approaches a problem. So if you were to look at, say, Katrina and understand that a lot of that levee failure was an engineering problem, things like that. So engineering is often brought in to solve problems. But I'm wondering, the approach of Humboldt, as you mentioned, is an environmental resources engineering. It seems like it's almost tilting traditional engineering on its head a little bit. Can you talk a little bit the differences between a traditional civil engineer and an environmental resources engineer?
Well, environmental resources engineer is looking at how we manage our resources well. And so we're not as focused on what we end up designing.
The context for a lot of people with engineers is like a gigantic dam that's constructed by engineers. So what you're doing seems to me, at least from the outside, to be a different approach. You're trying to work with nature, perhaps, and work with the resources instead of trying to overcome them and change them. To that degree. Would that be a fair encapsulation of it?
Sure. Sure.
Okay.
I mean, I think also if we want to look at the idea of reservoirs and the environmental impacts of reservoirs, there's a lot of what we're trying to do is train our engineers to work with other disciplines such as biologists and fisheries managers.
I know that Humboldt has worked a lot, the engineering department, with river restoration. I mean, obviously, some of those impacts are dam-related, but others are related to the timber industry and other impacts. Could you tell us a little bit about maybe that in the context of involving students in these projects, working in the rivers?
We have a number of faculty that are looking at river restoration issues and associated impacts, human impacts to river environments. For instance, we have folks that are looking at helping Caltrans change the way they design their culverts so that they're more fish-friendly. And so students are out looking at different culverts and helping, providing information to Caltrans of which of the culverts should be looked at and restored or refurbished sooner.
And you would do that in the context of working with probably a fisheries biologists and maybe folks that have an interest in water quality issues. Obviously, there's going to be some planning work and permitting. So this type of engineering seems to me similar to other engineering types in that you have a lot of different problems to solve, but you're taking a different approach, but it sounds like being more inclusive in the training of these engineers.
We're trying to. So one of the things that is pretty exciting and folks may not know about Humboldt County is we actually have a pretty concentrated group of folks that are experts in environmental restoration. And some of those folks are engineers, but as you mentioned, some of them are fisheries biologists or wildlife folk or planning people. And what's exciting is working with those different disciplines, we've had some of our graduates who now own their own businesses and work locally develop software that's being used all over the country to help design culverts.
Beth, one of the I got from you is, and this is intriguing to me, is that oftentimes people will think of engineers as people that have maybe a, you know, kind of a straightforward solution to a problem that they apply everywhere. But when you're, it sounds like in the context in which you are working, in, especially in environmental resources engineering, the idea that finding the solution that works in place is really important. So the creative problem-solving ability of the engineer is really important. And in fact, students in the program can come up with innovations in the field that maybe nobody's even thought of. So it's not just straight out of the textbook or a black box kind of solution.
Right, and we think a good engineer is one that's looking at all the constraints that are associated with a given problem. And one of those constraints are where you are, and another would be what materials are available and what expertise is available. And so our students are pretty committed to trying to come up with sustainable solutions. And being able to do that, you need to have a good idea about, once the engineer leaves, what will folks want to do to continue supporting whatever solution that community has come up with for that problem.
Right. Mm.
And so, you know, Beth, you often read about the fact that we're lagging behind other countries in achievement in science and math and technology, at least in our high school age kids, and perhaps in college, I'm not sure. But what do we do to overcome that, obviously, that gap? It seems like there's some countries that have really invested time and energy in this national policy to push education in engineering and math and science.
Well, there's actually a national report called Rising Above the Gathering Storm, where a number of our leaders, both in the business and the education and the federal government arenas, have come together to identify what do we really need to move forward into our next century here. And what they've identified is that we don't have enough people, young folks, deciding to study science, technology, engineering, mathematics. And what they think is the most important thing that we need is teachers who know and understand what science, technology, engineering, and mathematics is. And in particular, we find out that a lot of people don't understand what engineering is, and they think it's just you need to be good at math and science. And actually, one study that I think is kind of interesting is you can go around and ask people, what would you like to be when you grow up? And if someone says a doctor, usually the answer they'll get is, well, that's great, you want to help people. But if someone says they want to be an engineer, usually the response is, oh, you must be good at math and science. And what we found out, that's just not a good message to be sending to parents and to teachers and to children. Because really what engineers do is help people. And as you mentioned, everywhere around us, in our environment and that most people live in, everything around you is engineered. And somebody solved a problem to try to engineer and make your life a little bit easier.
So, Beth, one of the themes that Kirk and I have been exploring is innovation. And with previous people that we've talked with, it's come upon this idea that there's sort of a natural curiosity that children have about the natural world. And children are natural builders and creators and imaginers, so to speak. And, you know, with this report talking about teacher preparation and, you know, the importance of STEM or science, technology, engineering, and math education at a younger age. I think it's also probably, and you've probably come across this, and maybe you can talk about the Design Your Future program in this context, but this need to maintain the sense of curiosity and, you know, just sort of trusting in one's ability to try something, creating something, maybe letting it fail if it doesn't work, but trying again is sort of what a scientist does, what an innovator does, really. I mean, to me, that seems to be a theme that I've seen a lot of places, like this. How do we keep that natural curiosity of children engaged enough to keep them interested in the sciences and to keep them interested in becoming engineers?
Well, one thing that's happening, not so much in California, but in other states, is there's a big effort now to bring engineering education into K-12. And then there's a lot of actual research looking at the effectiveness of this approach. What we find out is engineering, which is problem solving, provides a lovely context for helping students understand why they might need to learn math and science. And what we've been doing locally here with the Design Your Future program, we've partnered with the Redwood Science Project, and we've been working with area secondary teachers who've been actually bringing this design approach to teaching math and science. And in fact, what's been fun is the teachers will work on some design projects with us in the summer, and they'll also learn about many design projects they can do with their students, such as how to site a microhydro project, or they've also got hydrogen fuel cell kits that they work with their students with.
Before we get too much farther, could you just maybe walk through what it might be? I mean, first, to just explain what a microhydro system is and then how you might work with teachers and ultimately students on such a project.
So microhydro is micro meaning small and then hydro meaning water, but it's a shortcut for hydropower. And so what you can do is say you have a hill close to where you live that water is running down. You can catch that water and make it, since it wants to go downhill, you can make it run through a turbine and generate electricity for you. And what's nice about microhydro is it usually has much fewer environmental impacts than, say, a large hydropower reservoir.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So what's fun is it's not too hard to give students enough information about how they could site one. They could decide how much power it might be able to, what the resource is there in their stream. And we've actually gotten a kit together with pretty low cost materials that we've given out to the teachers, and they can go out in the field with their students and actually go through the process.
Oh. You're listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Kirk Cahoon.
And David Narum.
And we're here with Beth Eschenbach, a professor of engineering at Humboldt State University. Beth, changing gears a little bit in direction, what we want to kind of get to in this conversation a little bit more is, how do you take these students at the high school level or even younger and interest them in pursuing engineering, math, and science? And I'll speak for myself briefly. When I was a student in high school and even in college and I was in the natural resources, I had a hard time putting math in context. And it sounds to me like what you're suggesting is that that's changed. A lot of the math that I took was theoretical and, you know, not necessarily in context of designing. What you're talking about here sounds really interesting to me as a person who really struggled with math through high school, through college, trying to make sure that I understood why, A, it was necessary, and B, why I was having to spend so much time learning it. When you're actually talking about, it sounds like, is that you're putting it directly in context. So you're talking about a project, which is project-based learning almost.
Yeah,
is that accurate?
Then the math makes sense. Why are you using it?
Right.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of the things we have them do during the workshops is come up with a lesson plan, and then we invite some engineers to come and brainstorm with the teachers about their lesson plans.
Hmm.
So one way you can make math more interesting to students is to provide a context or a problem that needs to be solved. And so we've had one of our teachers who's part of the Design Your Future workshops participate in a national competition with her middle school students at Monument Middle School in Rio Dell. They participated in a competition, it was for transportation, and they had a choice of three ideas. They could either design an alternative fuel or an alternative transportation, or they could look into the history of something associated with transportation. And in Cheryl Steiner's class, Cheryl's come up with all kinds of fun ideas at Monument Middle School. She had her students broke up into groups, and they looked at a number of different alternatives. Some of them were looking at cow manure and looking at biogas from that. They also looked at what kind of, you know, gases could they get from garbage. And then they also looked at algae as could they look at as a fuel source. And what ended up happening is the students came up with they developed their own criteria of what would be a successful alternative. And one of the things that they looked at, and I thought was interesting, is whether or not it would be economically feasible or create local jobs. And so their students designed these. They had four different teams, and some local Caltrans engineers came in and judged them. And the team that came up with the algae idea for fuel, an alternative fuel source, were the ones that moved forward to the national competition. The students then got to present with a webcam, and they were competing with teams from Mississippi, Oakland, Maryland. And they actually got to talk to the Secretary of Transportation, the Federal Secretary of Transportation, on the webcam. And they actually won. So that's exciting. The students are actually going to be going down to San Jose at the end of this month, and they'll win some money, and Cheryl's actually going to take them to Great American.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the kids actually did, the project they produced was an algae fuel. Is that it?
Yeah, and what happens, they were able to demonstrate it. They grew the algae, they dried it, they got into a powder. But Cheryl said she wasn't able to find an oil extractor, so she didn't get all the way there. But they did demonstrate all that. They got that far.
So, Beth, one of the things that many states are doing is in their state-mandated curriculum or just in the textbooks, introducing more of this type of learning, problem-based learning, creativity, you know, this design thinking. How is California doing in that regard? Are we lagging behind? Are we leading? What's going on here?
Well, in this respect, we're like, for example, you'd find in the state of Georgia or in Massachusetts that's actually really leading. You'll find K-12 engineering/technology standards. And part of those standards is the design process, which is basically a creative problem-solving process. And kindergartners have standards of learning. And actually, there's curriculum that's been developed at the Boston Museum of Science and actually in multiple places around the country. And people are actually even getting PhDs now in K-12 engineering education. But we're not seeing it move quite so quickly to California, at least not in terms of standards. What we are seeing is there are some really strong efforts trying to bring engineering into the classroom through other means. And one of them is called Project Lead the Way. And what's exciting is I know that we have a class at Ferndale High in engineering being taught right now. And it's not directly associated with the Project Lead the Way curriculum, but follows it closely. And we've had those students come to our campus and test their bridges, for example. They made a bunch of balsa wood bridges, and we helped them test them. So California is, I think, a little behind, and Humboldt County is where that's what our design, your future project's trying to do, is bring a little more engineering into our own region here.
So regarding the kindergarten aspect of it, I'm curious, what kind of projects would a kindergartner engage in?
Well, there's this lovely curriculum, for example, in this, it's called Engineering is Elementary is the name of the curriculum. And the way it starts is there'll be a story about a child who has a problem they're trying to solve, and they have to design a solution. And so one example is these children are trying to get these melons out of a tree. And they are, it's a kielbasa fruit, actually. They're trying to get these fruits out of a tree, and they can't get them out without breaking them. So they end up designing parachutes to do it. And so what ends up happening, after the children read the story that has a child who's trying to solve their own problem, the children then get to experiment with different materials and sizes and make their own parachutes. And what we found nationally is that this curriculum is pretty exciting for a lot of children because they'll turn to the teacher and say, are you sure there's not a right answer?
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is a lot of third graders who may have been turned off to school by then because if they don't get the right answer, they're a bad student.
I totally agree. I've been a teacher in my past, and I feel like, you know, the faith in one's ability to provide their own interpretation and their own creative solution is, you know, it's almost schooled out of people at some level. And you know, that's where the ability to, you know, to try and experiment and, well, things don't work, it's not the end of the world. So it wasn't the quote-unquote right answer for the problem to be solved, but you try something else.
Right, and so this curriculum actually has a cycle. The children learn that they come up, they design a solution, they test it, they innovate, they change it, they test it, they innovate, they change it. And what there's some lovely stories of, you know, schools that haven't been performing well where the entire elementary school takes on this approach. And one story that I liked was the kindergartners actually enjoyed it so much that when the teacher said, "We're not going to do engineering today," they just went on strike.
That's definitely rare. Beth, one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is the perception of science in the minds of students, maybe even in the general population. What are some of the misconceptions that students might have about science in general and how science might apply to their lives?
I think one misconception, and I blame the university, is that science is like cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I get out the recipe and I follow the directions, I'll get the right answer, which is a good cake or a good whatever I'm trying to make.
Right.
And actually, science is a process, and you don't know the answer. And that's it. So if you knew the answer, it wouldn't be research.
That's interesting. That's definitely different than most people perceive science. Is like you suggested, it's very reductionist in its original presentations to most students. And it's very simplistically described that if you understand this, then, you know, this is possible and this is possible. But I really like the analogy that you just made, because this is actually a very complicated and fluid process, and you're testing something by using science.
And I think, you know, to be fair to all the teachers out there who are teaching science, if you look at their first courses that they were asked to take at the university,
mm-hmm.
they were probably a bunch of recipes.
Yeah, I know mine were 20 years ago.
And the students, the people who are going to be our future teachers weren't actually given the space and time to be scientists,
mm-hmm.
to say, well, what's your hypothesis and how are you going to design an experiment to test your hypothesis?
Also, Beth, there's an interesting thing that I've noticed in education, which is there's becoming an interest at the national level of having people that aren't actually educated in a broad area, but they're actually fairly expert in a specific area, even as elementary school teachers. And that's something when I was a teacher, that was something that I observed starting to happen. So multiple subjects education would still be there, but you might have a specific expertise as, you know, an engineering undergrad and then a teacher. Perhaps that engineering background could be brought into the classroom and used in the way that you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that teachers are feeling somewhat constrained by the state mandates and the, you know, the need to teach to the quote unquote teach to the test, as it were, and the limitations it imposes on what they can do in the classroom creativity wise?
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, administrators are in a real hard place where they're being told that, you know, your campus is going to lose funding unless you do well on these tests. So they put a lot of pressure on their teachers to teach to the test. And I'm talking with teachers who are being told, I can't do science in my classroom because we're only allowed to do reading and math. We're not doing art anymore in my classroom because I'm only supposed to do math and reading. And I think it's a real disservice to us all, because the students need a space and time to be creative and to be able to understand why they need to learn their math and their reading.
Yeah, and there's, I think, an interesting perception among some people, perhaps, and maybe those who are in control of the levers of the state curricula, that somehow art is unrelated to engineering or to science. And in fact, really, many of the most beautiful artistic creations in the world are highly engineered, and vice versa.
So basically, if we're trying to resolve ourselves to fixing the gap between us and other countries in engineering, science, and math, how are some local initiatives going to play into that?
So the Decade of Difference initiative, the 2020 initiative, is a great opportunity, I think, for us to address that gap locally.
And this is a Humboldt County Office of Education program?
Right. Yeah. And basically, you know, it used to be in Humboldt County, you didn't need to get a high school degree to have a great job and be able to take care of your family. And now I think we know that that's not the case. And we've identified different areas of economic opportunity, and we want to make sure that by 2020, the children graduating from our schools locally have a good idea of what kind of training they need if they want to get a job here locally. One of those areas of economic opportunity is engineering. We have over 200 of our graduates from our Environmental Resources Engineering program working in Humboldt County. And so we want to get engineering into our schools and our K through 12 schools, and that's what Design Your Future has been trying to do. And this summer, we actually will be offering a summer session of Engineering is Elementary, and that'll be the third week of July, July 18th. And for school teachers that are interested in doing that, we are partnering with the Redwood Science Project, and they'll have an announcement up on their website soon.
And what is that website address, do you know?
It's www.humboldt.edu/RSP.
Okay.
For Redwood Science Project.
Great.
So we're hoping that if teachers get a better idea of what the economic opportunities are for our children in our region, then they can help our children be prepared to find jobs that can keep them in Humboldt County if that's what they'd like to do.
Beth, in your conversations, and we just have a little bit left, in your conversations with your students at HSU, do you ever ask them why they are doing what they're doing, what made them pursue the career they are?
Many of my students really want to make a difference, and for them, they see a bleak environmental future, and mm-hmm. and they want to see so and also social justice is another real issue with my students, and they want to be able to solve problems that make the world a better place for those that are economically disadvantaged or politically disadvantaged, and then also try to work as well as they can toward improving the environment.
Beth, I'm wondering in our closing if you can give us an example of a project that you may have worked on or one that you know about that really was the culmination of what you're describing. So it was an engineering approach or an engineering solution to a really difficult environmental or social problem.
Yeah, I mean, one project is looking at what kind of energy, renewable energy resources we have in our region, and whether or not it's financially and environmentally feasible to develop those, and what kind of impacts we could have there. So in particular, if we were able to turn Humboldt County into a renewable...
Energy island, I think, is the term.
So one project is examining the potential of Humboldt County becoming a generator of renewable energy resources.
You know, the RESCO Renewable Energy Project that the SHOTS Lab is spearheading is a project that seems to be to cover both engineering and social aspects. One of the obvious needs here as our economy has transitioned is the need for jobs. But we also have a need for energy that we can provide for ourselves, that we don't send money out of the county to bring in over the electric lines or whatever. So would you say that's a good example of something that the engineering department is doing that's... And with the SHOTS Lab to kind of meet multiple goals?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that's a great example.
Okay.
Another example, we've had, as I mentioned before, a number of our graduates have actually started their own businesses locally in environmental restoration.
Right.
And so what we can do is, as folks who are now out of work can help design.
Well, they become entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you've been listening to the EcoNews Report. We've been talking with Elizabeth Eschenbach, a professor of environmental resources engineering at Humboldt State University. We've been your hosts, David Narum
and Kirk Cahoon
of Greenway Partners. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU